Welcome to Decoding Careers, a podcast to help software engineers transition into a leadership role.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Decoding Careers. I'm Sam Yates, your host and the software engineering recruiter. And today I've got a really interesting guest on the show. Adam Woods is the guest that I'm currently with. He's an engineering leader at Clipso Cortex. Now, Adam's been in the tech industry as a software engineer and now a leader for over 14 years. Okay, so we're getting quite a bit of wisdom on today's show. During that time, he's worked in all different types of industries across startups, scale-ups, and also across the enterprise level as well. So he now serves as the CTO of Clipso Cortex, as I mentioned before, which is actually an energy intelligence platform that empowers homeowners to make smarter energy choices by providing apps that allow them to visualize and understand how power is produced and consumed in their home. Now, Adam's got a passion for mentoring fellow engineers on their career progression. He's a father of two, soon to be three, and it's his birthday on Thursday. He's got it all going on. And he's also, most importantly, an avid ultimate frisbee player. Now, thrilled to have him on our show to share his insights and expertise with us. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks. 14 years of experience. I feel like you might be overselling it a little bit, but we'll see how we go.
Yeah. Well, look, really, really appreciate you coming on the show. And you mentioned it's your first ever podcast as well. So it's a pleasure to be able to host that. But yeah, look, really interesting to get you on the show today. And I know we've had a few conversations over the past couple of months. Obviously, we've been it's been great to work alongside you guys as well. And just been really starting to build a bit of a relationship. And it's interesting to hear that this is the first role that you've been in that you've actually had sort of hands completely off. Can you tell me a bit more of sort of what that feels like and how you've managed to transition sort of into that role?
It's a bit of a weird feeling, you know, coming from so many years spent in software engineering and now looking after teams of software engineers. When you hear them talking about a particular problem, it's really easy to want to go and get stuck in, look at the code, try and make an update. Which I will admit I did dabble a little bit when I joined this company, almost just to prove it to myself that I could pick up Python and make a little contribution. But I'd say for me, it's been a very slow progression. You know, I've been in leadership roles for quite a few years now, and it's slowly releasing control more and more, less and less time spent on the tools. I think what you have to do really is a bit of mental adaptation to trick your brain into getting that same level of gratification out of the tasks that you spend your day doing that you used to get from coding. Because coding has such a great feedback loop. You know, you make that update, you push it, it passes all the tests, it goes to production, it does what it's supposed to do, and you can feel great about yourself, right? You get a really good, quite quick feedback loop and onto the next one, and it just keeps feeding back on itself. But when you're not doing the coding and you are purely a leader, you have to learn to take that gratification out of having a really good conversation with someone, knowing that, like, I unblocked that person, you know, or I helped them really see what could be possible. And you have to learn how to feel gratified and feel like it was a day well spent doing just those activities.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. And it's sort of empowering people to make them decisions as well, rather than giving them the answers. I bet it's more of a guide to pushing them in the right direction. But that's definitely an interesting insight there. Now, starting from the beginning of your career, take us back to when you wrote your first line of code, if you remember.
I don't know if I was doing any coding back when I used to be playing with DOS all the time, back in like the 90s, dating myself a lot here. But I know for sure I definitely was coding when I was about 12. I took a class in middle school, which was about web programming. And so at that time, GeoCities was a thing. And so it was cool to just register a site on GeoCities and just start throwing random snippets of HTML that you could find in there. So for me, that was kind of what really started to hook me in. Just being able to scrape a snippet from somewhere, put it in a HTML file, save it, put it up there, and all of a sudden there's a web page doing something full of stupid little animated GIFs and like content I'd copied from somewhere else just to say it was my web page that had this bit of information. But it was, I think that was the main introduction, and then been coding in some shape or fashion ever since.
Yeah, okay. And what computer was you using, do you remember?
Oh, man, I don't know. Some old Windows something or other. I wouldn't even know what model it was. What would it have been? Windows 95, I guess, probably at that time. I mean, I used to play with DOS a lot before that, but I think I would have been writing that stuff on Windows 95, I reckon.
A bit different to what you're using today, then.
Yeah, I haven't touched a Windows computer in a long time. I have a disdain.
What are you working with now?
I've been on Macs pretty much ever since I went to uni. Yeah, I love Mac OS personally. Yeah. I wish I could get my family to all come on board. It would have saved me a lot of tech support issues in the past.
It's a tough onboarding process, though. if you don't use one.
Everyone says it's such a hard leap to make, but I think the only people that really experience that are like your power users who are used to using all these keyboard shortcuts that aren't exactly one-to-one mapping. Mac OS, I feel, is fairly intuitive, right? It's easier than Windows.
It's easy, said for an engineer. Maybe I can imagine the conversations with the missus trying to get him on there.
Maybe I'm biased.
Yeah.
She loves Mac, but my family are the laggards. They haven't come across yet.
So why did you get into software engineering?
I think for me, I had always been playing with computers. Ever since we got one in the house, I was always on it. Like I said, playing around in DOS, learning how to play the games and just work around in a terminal. It just always held a lot of appeal. And then as I did those courses that became available as I went through school, I just started to really love the problem-solving aspect of it. And I could never really shake that. And, you know, our technology in the house, our computers at home always got upgrades. So I'd always want to spend more time with it, understand it more, see what I could make it do. And it just kind of led me down that path, and it stuck. I mean, I did a couple different degrees at uni. I didn't go computer science straight through from the beginning, but it was the one that really gripped me the most.
So what did you study then?
So I went to Purdue, which is where my dad went. So it was about an hour outside of Indianapolis, where I'm from. And he went through and did electrical engineering. And when I was trying to decide what I wanted to do for uni, I knew I wanted to go there. Some friends were going there as well. And I thought, okay, electrical engineering, that sounds good, right? You know, that's nerdy stuff. You know, I can dig that. And I applied for that. I got accepted for that. And that was cool. But then, I don't know, maybe a month out before starting my freshman year, I thought, wait a minute, I don't think I really want to do this. So I actually changed my major before I even started my first day. And I went to food science, because it was a recommendation from my aunt, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I did that for a semester, and it was interesting, you know, like just getting familiar with college anyways. I was doing a lot of gen eds, so it was fine. And then I switched to computer science the next term, did that for a semester. And then at Purdue, they have two degrees. So you can do computer science, which is what most of us would assume is a computer degree. But they also had the School of Technology, which offered a computer technology degree. So the difference between the two was computer science was your more hardcore computing, algorithms, big O notation, really deep theory on computer science. And then computer technology was meant to be a more practical application of the computer science concepts and programming. So I did a semester in computer technology, and then that's what stuck. I jumped around a little bit. You know, you got to figure out what feels right in university. It's a good time to kind of dabble a little bit.
Well, that's probably good as well, because you've got no regrets, because you tried a few other things and then you've obviously landed in computer science, and that's where your passion lies. And just on that then, so do you need to get a computer science degree to be a good engineer, in your opinion?
Most definitely not. I think when I was going through university, it was still more the well-trodden path that you go to university, you try and get to the best university that you can, and you get a computer science degree because that's the mark of approval that the industry is going to recognize to get you a job at a good company that you want to go to. I think these days it's becoming, I don't have numbers to back this up, but becoming less of the mandate that you must do that. There's a lot of options out there for these coding boot camps and general assembly and all these kinds of things like that, that create pathways for people who are either just coming out of high school who want to get into coding, or even people who've been in industry for many years who want to actually make the switch. So I don't think it's really that imperative that you have a computer science degree. Now, I don't know what hiring rates look like and whether companies really are placing so much emphasis on that. But when I look at candidates, I don't even really look at their university. I'll be fair. If I happen to see like Harvard University, okay, I'm probably going to give that person a bit of preference in all honesty, right? Because that's just such a strong mark of confidence that they must be a standout individual. But unless it's something like that, I don't really give it too much weight.
Yeah. Okay. That's an interesting insight there. I was actually going to ask you if you was to look at a CV with someone from university or without, like putting Harvard aside, you wouldn't really compare.
I think, if I'm hiring for a junior candidate, I'm not really that fussed about university versus time spent at one of these code academies. Because any of those people, whether they come out of university or a coding academy, most people are pretty fresh, right? I think most engineers who have been out for a while could say that, sure, I learned some nice fundamental concepts in university, but when I got into the industry, it was like starting from the ground up, because it's just all of a sudden you're met with all these real world challenges, which are probably pretty complicated for you having just stepped into it. So I don't know that university necessarily gives you so much stronger a footing to start on than having a really good passion and seeking out something like General Assembly and saying, you know what, I'm really interested in that. That person is showing a lot of initiative to go and seek out that course and just try and go straight towards something that they see as interesting.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Okay, now let's talk about your first job in software engineering. Maybe take us back there, sort of who you was working with and what you was doing and how you got the job.
Yeah, so I guess I did do like a summer internship thing at the university. So that was just through working with heads of department. They had an opening in a different part of the university that needed some coding work. So I did that, but let's say outside of uni. My first coding job or engineering job was with a consultancy. I think now they're called Crow Horwath, but doesn't really matter. Just a consultancy. They did like tax and stuff, but then they also had a software division. And I got into that because there was an alumnus from my university who had gone there and he'd come back to do something on campus, some sort of recruitment drive. They do like job fairs and stuff. And my professor, I think, knew him well. And then we just got to talking and then that turned into a summer internship. And then after university, I just followed that along and went to work for them for a little bit. And then I found another gig. But it was like summer internships are a great thing. A lot of companies do them. And I would certainly recommend that any prospective engineer try and grab one of those as a really low barrier to entry way to get your foot in the door. And then often, as long as you do a pretty good job, there's a decent chance you'll get a full-time job working at that same company after you graduate.
Yeah, okay. And how did you get that role, the first job?
Oh, well, yeah, so I did that summer. Well, I got the introduction through my professor and then that turned into that summer internship. Yeah, that for one summer and that was the year before I graduated. And then I graduated the next year and they had a job waiting for me.
Done a good job then.
Yeah, it was good.
Now, talking about sort of supervisors or leaders that you've worked with in the past that you sort of looked up to, like how much impact do you think leaders and supervisors have had on your career as an engineer?
I think they've been massive. I've been fortunate to work with some really good managers who, when I expressed my interest to progress, they were very receptive to that, and they immediately started helping me to understand what that next step was going to look like. You know, they got me a seat at the table at some, you know, meetings with higher ups that I wouldn't have otherwise had a chance to. So I got to hear what the level of thinking was there, how you conducted yourself in those kinds of situations, what things were of interest when you want to present to a group of senior managers, perhaps. And also, what is people? Well, in my case, I was interested in people management. Not that everyone has to do that, but they also kind of taught me what sort of things do you do as a people manager, both through me observing how we were interacting, but also just giving me tips for when I was going to take that step. So yeah, I've been very fortunate that I've had that in the companies that I'm working with, and I haven't necessarily had to go seek mentorship externally, which is just lucky, right? You know, not everyone is given that. But I mean, I suppose in some respects that can be a benefit of working at larger companies that have those structures in place. You know, I think they can get a bad reputation that they're big companies and there's too much bureaucracy, but they also can present the opportunity to progress as a manager in a more formalized way. You know, in smaller companies, everything's informal and everyone wears a million hats, right? But if you want to kind of see what people management looks like and leadership looks like, there's big companies, or bigger companies, I should say. You know, there's plenty of middle tier companies that are of sufficient size to offer that, but there is advantages to working in larger companies like that.
Yeah, okay. And how do you know when you're ready to become a leader? If you're a senior engineer now who's working, you know, in a good environment, building some great products, getting quite a lot of responsibility in the business, but obviously you've been through it. When is the turning point where you go, I'm ready to become a leader? Or is there not one and you just got to take a leap?
Well, oftentimes if you're a good senior engineer working in a company and you've been there for a while, you probably are a leader already in the eyes of those less experienced than you, whether you mean to or not. Often there's a lot of informal leadership that happens. We look up to the people that are more expert in our particular craft, right? To step into what would be a more formalized leadership role, I think, I don't know if I'd say there's a particular turning point. You firstly need to just understand, what does that even mean in your company? Because it's going to vary dramatically depending on what company you're in. You know, that could entail people management. It might not. It might just mean that you're formally, in a title sense, recognized as a senior engineer, or you could even be a VP of engineering, perhaps, without even a people management responsibility, depending on the company. I think you're going to have to start getting comfortable with the idea that you are going to be stepping slowly, if not abruptly, more away from the tools, because that role is going to necessitate that you're probably going to spend more time in meetings, right? And you're going to do more strategy discussion. You're going to spend more time influencing people. And that just consequently means less time coding. So you got to feel like you're ready for that a little bit, because, you know, it can be a little bit jarring. Some companies, unfortunately, you almost step into that role and then you feel like the same is expected of you in coding output than you had before, but now you also have these other things on top, right? So you also need to have a good understanding of what the role is and a very clear and open conversation with who your manager is to make sure that the scope of that role is what you're looking for and what they expect from you.
And that's how it normally works. It obviously depends on the environment, but senior engineer, tech lead, you can probably go from like 70 to 70, 30, 70 on the tools, 30 off, depending on the role. Then team lead might be a bit less. And then normally though, head of engineering or engineering manager or CTO, depending on sort of what environment you're in. So you think it's and I think that's a good point to manage expectations before you get into that leadership role of what your actual day-to-day looks like. Because if you're expected to do the same output from a code perspective, as well as another full-time role, maybe the company that you're working for isn't setting you up the right way.
Yeah. And it can be very stressful. I feel like I've gone through that of stepping into a people management role, but then feeling like I need to produce the same output because they look to me as a senior engineer that, oh, I should, you know, really be producing all this code and building out all these systems. And people have a natural tendency because they're used to you being that senior engineer that they often come to you for these quick things. Hey, can you fix that for me? Can you look into that for me? It's a natural behavior and it's no one's fault, right? But it can be quite stressful if you're now finding that you have to spend so much time not doing the coding that you, like, you should often try and take yourself out of the critical path of delivery, I think, as you move into there, as much as you can, because inevitably you're just not going to be 100% on that thing like you want to be and like you feel you should be, because you, of course, you want to make sure that project is delivered quickly. Yeah, it can be a bit challenging at times.
Yeah. And what if you had to give a single piece of advice to an engineer that was about to make that transition, what would you say?
Single piece of advice. Yeah. Know what you're getting into. You know, like I mentioned before, like, make sure you know and you've clearly outlined what that the expectations of that role are and that they map to what you want. Right. It can be very easy to look at that next step as, oh, that's where I have to go to increase my salary. Right. And so you may end up taking on things that actually aren't really how you want to be spending your day. And you're not, yes, you'll make more money, but you ultimately might be less satisfied because you're spending your days doing things that you didn't want to do. So hopefully your company is able to support you in growth of salary and your career, regardless of whether you want to step into that leadership role or you actually would prefer to just remain as an expert individual contributor, right? You could just potentially just become a staff engineer or principal engineer or whatever and just be great at doing the coding side of things and not take on all these other things that you don't really want to do. And it's going to be worse for the people that you're leading or managing if you do that for the wrong reason.
Yeah, okay. And if you had your time again, what would you do differently?
What would I do differently? That is a great question. I probably would have tried to spend a bit more time networking, I think. It's not something that I think comes as naturally to me or most engineers, but I think there's a lot of benefit to that. It just opens doors for you when you're at those points in your career where you want to perhaps look for a new role. Then there might be a lot more opportunities had you spent that time. And also just creating a network of peers is really beneficial. And I've come to learn that in the last few years. I happen to have been fortunate enough that I made a connection who was running this. It's just a Slack group initially, when it started, it was like a breakfast club, right? It was a bunch of engineering leaders that would catch up for breakfast once a month or so. And then now that turned into like a Slack group. And that has been tremendously valuable for me to just have a network of peers at the ready that I can just message with a question and get a lot of different viewpoints on. And I would have loved to have that all the way through, right? So I think if people can spend time seeking out their peers, however they might go about that. Maybe they go to meetup groups or they know of a Slack group that they can get involved in or something. Establishing that network, I feel like, has just been such a benefit to work things out for me when I maybe didn't have another sounding board available. Like when I did a startup for a little while and it was really just me as an engineer. So I didn't have anyone in the company I could just bounce ideas off of. And that's when I found that this peer group really showed up. It was just amazing. Like it really helped get me out a lot of sticking points.
I spoke to a few engineering leaders that are in similar groups. It sounds like a common trend. And it's such a good idea because different perspectives, people have been in that situation before, people are at different stages of the career, even though if they are engineering leaders, some might have been doing it for 30 years, someone might have just got into it. So I think it's a really interesting group to have. And I bet you now you look at it and think, well, if I had that 5 or 10 years ago. So you would advise a lot of engineers to look at trying to get involved in them groups. Yeah.
Yeah. Just try and spend some time establishing a network of peers. They don't even, these days especially, they don't have to be in the same geographic area. It doesn't matter, right? Find them however you find them. But sometimes I think that can be even more valuable than perhaps a specific mentor, right? Usually we'd say mentors would be someone above, more senior than you, who spent more time in industry that you would look up to. But there's a lot of value to be had just from people you would more readily call your peers, just because everyone's got different experience, right? And everyone's going to bring some different viewpoint to any problem that's presented. So if you can try and establish that kind of structure around you, I think it's quite beneficial.
Yeah, okay. Do you want to tell us a bit about what you're doing now and what your role looks like and the business that you're working with?
Yeah, sure. So I've been with Clipsal Cortex just over a year, and it's been quite an interesting journey so far. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in software, but stepping into the renewable space and a space that deals a lot with hardware and energy, it's been a huge learning for me just from domain knowledge, which I love. Like, it keeps me quite interested. And, you know, perhaps for people, that's a good thing to look for is, if you're feeling a bit stale, maybe try a different industry, right? It's still software. It's just a different problem set. And that can really invigorate something in you. And so that's been really cool. We're a decent size. We're a team of 12 in engineering at the moment, right? So not super small, but still scrappy, which is fun. And slowly growing the size of the team and really just trying to make a dent on the renewable space, which is exciting. It's nice to be working at a company where you don't have to do too much mental gymnastics to see how the output of your work has a positive impact on society. I feel like if you spend enough time, you can convince yourself of anything, right? But it's nice to feel like you have a more direct line to the output being of a positive impact.
Yeah. And what's next for Adam?
What's next for him? Well, as you said, I'm about to become a father of three. So that's what's next. That's going to be something real. But beyond that, you know, it's only been a year at this company. I'm not one to jump ship regularly. So I really want to stick this out and see what it can be, what we can grow it into, however long that might take. But I'd love to see it become a household name, see anyone who gets a solar system have our app and see that it's making a meaningful change for them, see the team grow. Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I've always told myself I want to like develop more of a writing practice. So maybe we'll see if I actually do that. We'll see. I don't know.
I think you can have enough on your plate.
Yeah, probably. I reckon I'll be a bit busy for a while. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, nice. Well, really appreciate you being on the show, Adam. Shared some really good insights there. All the best to your family with the third arriving, and hopefully you get back playing frisbee sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we'll see. It would be good to get back on the field at some point.
Cheers. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Decoding Careers with Sam Yates. This podcast is proudly brought to you with the support of recruitment agency Discovered People. To find out more, go to discoveredpeople.com.au.